everyone, and welcome to episode 576 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. Just enjoying some pizza over the weekend, you know?
Oh, no, I don't know if you should say that, Richard. People get very upset.
Am I allowed to enjoy pizza anymore?
And we got another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Also enjoying a little bit of pizza. I did actually go and grab a slice this past weekend, because for some odd reason, something made me crave it.
Domino's stock's going
maybe
up.
Maybe that's what this is really all about.
Domino's pizza is not good, Richard. It's the cheesy bread.
Anyway, today, we're going to be talking a bunch about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. People have been asking, since we didn't have a real spoiler season this time because of the huge leaks, people want some card reviews, so we're going to be talking about some of the best cards for constructed from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Also, some weird, like, finance stuff with TMNT after opening some collector boosters. And then, of course, we get some Moto Wizards decklist drama this week. So those are the big topics for today. But before we get into that, we got some sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. The RFG Deckbox Max features a clear window to showcase your commander while protecting your deck. Available in three different sizes to fit all of your decks, including your standard and commander decks, the EquipMag system lets you attach optional dice boxes or even multiple decks together. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. Anyway, let's talk some Magic, and let's start with this deck list thing, and then we'll get into TMNT and the boxes and everything for the rest of the podcast. Richard, it was an interesting week as far as deck lists. Deck lists kind of matter to us a little bit because we do the metagame page, which has a lot of deck lists. What went down this week with deck lists on Modo?
All right, Wizards restricted deck list data once again. So, if you go to MTG Goldfish, right, and you see deck lists from Magic Online, right, they come from Wizards or from Daybreak. And the history of this is kind of storied, but last week, Daybreak basically came and said, hey, we're making changes. We're changing the way we're publishing data, not because we want to, but because Wizards made us, okay? Like, they kind of just, like, straight up said that. And what happened was we're basically only getting top cut for the event. So, like, top 8 for 64 players or less, top 16 for 128 or less, and then top 32 for 129 plus. Prior to that, we would get league data. We would get top 32 of challenges. Now, we didn't really talk about this, but it's like Wizards restricting decklist data. Like, what's new, right? They've done it a lot in the past. Mm-hmm. At one point, we used to get every single deck on Modo. When Daybreak took over, there was one point where we got, like, every single league deck, every single challenge deck, every single prelim deck. But then, in a shocking news event later that week, Wizards just turned around and said, JK, guys, you can have the deck list back. So they reversed it. Apparently enough people complained that they reversed it. It was clear from Daybreak's initial communication that this is all Wizards doing. Daybreak was not happy about it. They did it anyway, but then Wizards reversed course. To me, that's exceptionally strange because I'm pretty sure they knew everything. You know, all this backlash would have happened. And it's strange because I still don't know what they're doing, right? Like, their main argument was they felt the metagame was not representative of tabletop. right? And then for some formats like Legacy and Vintage, you know, like what tabletop are we talking about, right? It's highly regional already, right? So the metagame is the online metagame, right? So I don't know what they're doing with this, but Wizards spending time trying to remove data from us, trying to hide the metagame. I don't know, right? So yeah, and then they reversed it, and I'm sure they'll come back in the future with some other type of change too. But
the reversal has me even more confused. Like, I'm glad they reversed it. There was a lot of pushback, a lot of people writing articles and posting on social media. It was pretty unanimous that people wanted the deck list to remain. I really didn't think that they would reverse on this. I thought maybe you could make a pretty good argument that if the problem, which Wizard says the problem is, like, they think the aggregators are missing the paper metagame to some extent. Like, the Modo meta is different than the paper meta, and that doesn't show up in data aggregators. So that's kind of Wizard's argument. I thought maybe there was, like, a way we could push them to publish, you know, Legacy and Vintage. Because, like you said, if that's your concern, like, that is the meta for those formats. Like, a huge percentage of the Legacy and Vintage that's being played right now is played on Magic Online, way more so than in paper. So I thought maybe they would reverse on some of the Modo formats, where they're formats that are primarily played on Magic Online. I didn't expect them just to reverse everything, and they did in the course of like a few days. Like, it didn't take that long. So I figured they actually just really thought, like they've said in the past, that like Standard gets solved too fast, more data is actually bad for the game. So I figured it was just another one of those things. But if that was your belief, why would you reverse it? I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make of this. Like, what do you think of their argument, Richard? And also, Krim, like, are we missing something on the metagame page? Like, is there a difference between the Modo meta and the paper meta? Like, what do you think of that argument in general? I'm very curious if there's even a problem here that Wizards is trying to solve, or if this isn't really even an issue.
I don't even know what they're going for either, right? Because why would you, like, go back on it after, like you had mentioned, like, talking about, like, how you want the numbers to, because it doesn't accurately represent tabletop. I don't understand that. And then going back on your own demand from Daybreak or whatever. Yeah. So, also, I just don't understand why they keep doing this. I feel like every 3-4 years, they're like, let's hide the deck list and the data. I'm like, I don't, why?
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing to have out there.
And it feels even sillier today. Like, I got it. When they did this, like, 10 years ago, and we were publishing those, like, 100,000 matches of Standard analyzed before everyone was doing, you know, all the matchup matrices and stuff, and Wizards kind of shut that down. When they did that a decade ago, Arena didn't exist. Now, like, there's so much data and so many deck lists that come from Arena trackers, and, like, there's so much data, people doing these full, you know, matchup matrices and so forth, all the win rates. To me, it seems like a losing battle at this point, when a decade ago, maybe, like, hiding the deck list would actually do something. But now I don't even know what it does, because there's so much data coming from other sources. So I really don't understand. What do you think, Richard? Like, is the paper meta different than our metagame page and the Modo meta? Or is this just, like, kind of a made-up excuse or problem, you think?
It is different, but I don't see why hiding the online data fixes you not representing tabletop meta correctly, right? So why does it differ? Like, anyone who actually plays paper will know it's different, right? Because, let's say, even at an FNM level, the most casual level, right, your meta may be completely different, right, due to card accessibility, how sweaty the players are, and the Krim special, right? You don't metagame for the meta. You metagame for the top players, right? So it doesn't really matter what the meta is. Like, if you're trying to win your local thing, right, you are, you know, sitting in a bracket with, like, the top 2 or 3 players. You're going to play decks that beat them, not what the general mass is going to play, right? Now, the bigger the events, the older the formats, the more this gets amplified, right? People don't switch Legacy decks, like, every 3 seconds. Because their Legacy decks cost a ton, right? And they've invested, like, many years into learning the lines and stuff like that. Whereas on Modo or even Arena, you can swap decks willy-nilly, like, tomorrow, right? If there's a new hot deck from the new latest set, it takes you 3 seconds using a card loan program to get the new deck and go play it, right? In paper, you got to get all the cards, right? You got to invest all the money, and people probably won't do that, right? So, yes, right? And even when I played Legacy and stuff like that, some areas specialize in certain decks, right? Like this area has all of the, you know, the dredge players, right? So you come here, you know you're going to play dredge all day, right? The local players only play dredge here, or they play show and tell here, et cetera, right? Having said that, what does the online data and removing it help you with this problem, right? Yeah. Like absolutely nothing, right? So the online data is like the perfect data, right? Like in a world where everyone has full accessibility, right? This is what it would look like, right? And then you need to apply your local meta, right? Krim is at my meta. He plays control. Here is the top looking control deck on Modo, right? He's probably playing that thing, right? Like you got to use your brain and apply stuff to do this. So I don't know. I think it's a losing battle. There are many card games out there where full data is given, and it's fine, and it's great, right? Yeah. So I'm kind of tired. Like, I'm mad at Wizards because it's like, just fix your game. It's like, no one plays Standard because it sucks, not because... By the way, that's not true right now. Standard is great. But, like, you know, last Standard, right? It sucked because it sucked, right? Not because we had too much data. Lists. You know what I mean? Like, that was not the problem. The problem was your card design was not up to par, right? Like, people aren't playing Modern or whatever because you're focusing too much on Commander, not because Goldfish says the meta is this or, you know, whatever. Insert your favorite website, right? Like... So it just feels like, what are they even doing, right? Like, why even waste effort to attempt this? And if you're going to do it right. You know what I mean? Like, make Daybreak shut off the data and don't renege on it. Yeah. Like, what the heck, right? Like, why are you doing it and then reneging? Like, what? Just do something right, Wizards, please.
It almost in some ways reminds me of the, like, did the influencers make you not buy Spider-Man with their negative content type of thing? Like, it's kind of the decklist version of that, where it's like, oh, did the decklist make you think Standard was bad? Like, no, like, it's maybe the cards that you're printing or, like, the choices that you've made. I do wonder, though, let's say Wizards honestly really thinks we need more paper representation on the metagame page, various data aggregators. There's more than just us out there. Like, let's say they want more paper data there. Wouldn't the way to do that be to, like, have some sort of program to collect more paper lists or run more paper tournaments? Like, I think data aggregators would want those lists. The problem is a lot of, like, small paper events or smaller paper events don't publish their deck lists anywhere. So if Wizards had, like, some sort of setup to, like, gather deck lists from WPN stores when they do their, kind of like the infamous small Japanese tournaments. I get so many deck lists because Haru Ruria does a really good job of publishing all of their deck lists at all their different game stores, which we don't do over here for the most part. You don't find all these, like, 10-player FNM level tournaments publishing their data. Couldn't Wizards solve the problem that way? If they really want more paper deck lists, shouldn't they just, like, gather more paper data and put it out there?
That was back when we used to have 5Ks, though. I don't know if you remember this, Richard, but 5Ks, 10Ks, very prominent in Northern California. We had all those all the time at Channel Fireball. So it was like one of those things where I think also the size of just the number of paper Standard tournaments have gone down significantly, right? So I don't even know if we'd have any deck lists to publish, right? Because outside of like L.A., you know, okay. Northern California.
No. Wizards. Like, so if Wizards' goal, so Wizards actually should do this. Here, Wizards, pro tip. Let me steal you Facebook's business model, okay? You can just steal everyone's deck lists and know everything you want to know about us, right? Okay, so deck registration. I don't even know how deck reg works, right? Do we do it 100% online now? If not, force them. And then now you have every deck list of every single paper tournament that's ever fired. And you can do any kind of analytics you want on it. How many people are buying cards from the newest set to play in their tournament? Bam, you have that data, right? How many people are just playing whatever, like, 10-year-old jank they have in their closet? Bam, you have that data, right? You have the top 8, top 16, top 32. You know, how concentrated is it? You know, you can even send ads of Modern Horizons 4 to the West Coast if, you know, West Coast players are sweatier than East Coast. You know, like,
yeah.
Deck reg needs to be 100% online and then data processed, right? Like Wizards should know everything about sales, everything about the newest sets, everything about Universes Beyond, all of that through deck lists that people are submitting for FNMs and, like, any major tournaments, right? And we can do our Japanese small tournament. We can publish FNM deck lists. Why not? Yeah. Right? So, like, you can actually do it, right? So, yeah, I guess FNM, you don't deck reg. Okay, so that's for bigger tournaments. But you can force everyone to deck reg for FNM too, right? Like, so I don't know. Wizards can fix this if they want it, and they probably should, because this information is gold. Just look at, like, social media, right? All they do is just steal your information and use it, right? So Wizards can do this too, right? So they should definitely be doing this if they don't, right?
Even not for the sake of the community or else they want decklists, but just for their own internal use if they're not doing this, it seems like it would be incredibly beneficial to have that data internally to make your decisions as far as, like, everything, like where you're running tournaments, what the next sets you're doing. Like, you'd have so much more information. So if they don't do it for us, do it for yourselves. It is funny that you mentioned that, though, because I know they use the companion app is one of the ways that people register for tournaments. And this wasn't on our list of topics for today, but it kind of relates, so I got to bring it up. I don't know if you saw this, but they allowed the companion app. They added a feature where it shows your event history going back years or whatever, all the events you played in. And people started finding that game stores were signing them up for events when they weren't even at the game store or, like, even in town. They were just registering them for events to inflate the numbers. Do you think this connects, like, at all? Like Krim was saying, you know, there's not as many standard tournaments. Does this suggest that we really don't have any idea? Like, when Wizards said, oh, you know, we're up 20% as far as people playing standard LGSs or whatever they said during earnings a week or two ago, does this call that into question? Like, does this mean those numbers, like, we don't really know, and even Wizards doesn't really know how many people are actually playing these events because LGSs can just sign you up even if you're not there?
That could be true, right? I mean, this is such a who knows, right? Like,
yeah.
I hope that they would be better at getting the numbers than this, but, like, if they are just going off the companion app, then people have been kind of duping Wizards this whole time, right? And personally, if you want to inflate your events, that's, you know, that is where things get a little weird. Like, why are they inflating events? Is it just to maintain WPN and, like, you know, or like, get promos to sell in store? Because because some stores, they could just be getting the promos and then just selling it, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, giving it out to the players. Now, if they're doing that and just giving it to every player, all the promos, whatever, you know, hey. But, like, also, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Which one is it? So, and do, like, you kind of smudging up the numbers feels a little weird, but.
You know what's funny? So, in One Piece, in Asia, there's this problem where everyone is, like, making multiple accounts to register for events. Mm-hmm. And there is, like, this event that's, like, 32 players, okay? So it's a local event. 17,000 people applied. Because, like, to get to these events, you'd be like, oh, it's always, like, full. So I got, it's lottery. So I got to make, like, 10 Bandai IDs and then apply and hope one of them get in. And then so they're like, okay, you know, maybe we need to, like, tie this to your passport or, you know, whatever your national government ID is to make sure you're a real person so that you can actually get in and play. And then if they find you to be double accounting, you get disqualified. And famously, one of the best players in the world was discovered to be doing this and they got banned for, like, a year or something. But you kind of have that problem, right? People will game the system no matter what you do. And then in order to fix it, you need to do this, like, super heavy-handed process of, like, yeah, upload your, you know, driver's license to play FNM. You're like, bro, I don't want to, right? Like, it's weird, right? How are you going to fix this? Because players can game the system, stores can game the system. And at the end of the day, like, garbage data in, garbage data out. But, you know, I think Wizards will investigate this because I know a lot of players are now finding out that their ID has been used without their consent, right? And they'll complain, and then Wizards will launch an investigation. And if they find it to be widespread, they got to do something to lock down these stores, right? So how will they do it? I don't know, right? Maybe they just push out an update to Companion app to see, you know, hey, did you register for this event? You're like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. Right? Or maybe they make... I don't know, right? But they got to do something, but it's going to be more heavy-handed, right? Because right now it's super casual. Right? Anyone can sign up for a companion app. Apparently, stores just need your number to register you. They don't even need your barcode or anything, right? But maybe it becomes like an ATM thing, right? Where only if you are present with your companion app can you sign into the event, right? And then, therefore, the stores can't game it. And then they tie your ID to your identity somehow, and then you can't game it either, and then everyone is super locked down, but it's rough.
I mean, did you hear about how at a, like, I think the last Riftbound regionals, not the one that just happened, but somebody you sign up with your username, right? Your in-game email, your Riot email, And so your handle shows up when you sign up at these events. But then somebody sold the ticket because, you know, it's kind of like Bandai, right? There's only X amount of tickets sold to compete. And so somebody sold their ticket to somebody else, who knows, friend, acquaintance, who knows. Then they get caught in the feature match. And as someone not the person this account is registered to, and they get DQ'd after beating the opponent that they won in the feature match, that then causes a whole huge delay, because then it's like, well, now we have to figure out what are we going to do, because the person that lost can't go back and redo the whole tournament, right? So
wow, that's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what. I don't know. I guess this is going on in all games. And I guess this has been going on in Magic for a long time. I remember when I first started playing pre-release forever ago now, I'd go to this little hole-in-the-wall LGS, and I was brand new to stuff. I didn't know what I was doing. And they always would be like, oh, you got your DCI number. And I'd be like, oh, no, I don't know it, like, whatever. And I'd be like, oh, don't worry. I'll just, here's a new one. Just write it out. So I think I got, like, 5 or 6 DCI numbers, because every time.
Pump and organized play.
That's probably giving them new players showing up at their pre-release, which is probably beneficial in like however the system's set up. So it was fine for me because I got to play, so I didn't care. But I realized later that, well, maybe there was some benefit for them too, for having like more new players showing up to pre-release or something. So, or if you want a cynical take, maybe they just take the history off the companion app so no one can tell when their LGS signs them up when they're not around.
Why did they add history?
I don't know.
I feel that goes against 2026. Most people will look at it and be like, damn, I suck. I feel bad. You know what I mean? Like, I, you know, we hide all of this, right? Like, your real MMR is always hidden, right? Like, so I don't know why they did this. I guess they don't really show you your full win rate. You kind of have to, like, back it out from the numbers. But I'm surprised because did people really ask for it? Like, why did it just show up suddenly? And I feel most people just get discouraged looking at that. They're like, "Hey, look at this weird, right?" So it's kind of funny, right?
And it used to, Magic's moved further and further away from that. I remember you used to be able to see people's, like, MMR or whatever on Modo. You used to be able to see their ranking, their ELM
their
number.
ELO.
You could look up your opponent and see, like, how far up they were. There used to be leaderboards, and they've, like, over time just removed more. I don't even think you can see your own ELO anymore on Modo. I think they've even gotten rid of that. So, like, over the years, because of the feel bad, they've just, like, removed that aspect. So it is kind of funny they'd add this history feature. But, yeah, I don't know. If you got the companion app, I guess look it up and see. You might have played way more events than you realized, actually. So anyway, let's move on and talk some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the full set's out. Spoilers are over, whatever amount of spoilers we had. It was a weird spoiler season because of the big Lorwyn Eclipse pre-release leaks. But the full set's out as of Friday, and there's been a lot of conversation about this set. And before we talk about cards and finance and stuff, I gotta ask you guys, where are you at with this set? Now that you've seen the entire thing, Richard and Krim, what do you think of TMNT?
Richard, since you're the turtle head aficionado, why don't you lead us into this?
All right, I swear I'm not rage baiting, guys. check the Discord timestamps, okay? So last week the full spoilers went out, and I've been saying on the podcast that Turtles not doing it for me. I'm like I'm like a huge Turtles fan. I love Turtles as a kid. Turtles number one franchise above Final Fantasy, above whatever nostalgia bait I've given you. Like, Turtles is number one. Turtles over X-Men even, right? And then I was like, oh, the set's not doing it for me. And then last week they revealed the full spoilers, and I'm like, they got me. I want these cards. They're kind of cool, right? Like, some of these art treatments, like the bonus sheet cards and the throwback. I was able to overlook the ugly Nickelodeon cards and, like, get my Eastman and Laird, you know, art going. So I actually kind of hyped for the set, and I'm like, oh, thank goodness it's on Arena. It's not going to be one of these stupid Spider-Man situations where I want to play with the cards, but here I am sitting with in web and whatever the heck, right? So
must be nice. I could never know.
I'm kind of excited. And you know, I was like, There was a chance where I didn't get into early access, and I was like, genuinely sad. I was like, aww. Right? I was like, damn, like, how am I going to play Turtles, right? But then I got that straightened out. But so, you know, I'm ready for free release. I'm ready for everyone giving me their bulk, okay? If you see me and you don't like Turtles, just give me all your bulk so I can complete my master set.
Rich is going to come home with a stack of pizza cards.
And I know this looks bad amongst the shilling allegations, okay? But like, for real. They got me with the full spoiler, right? Like, I don't care about the cards. I just care about kind of the art and the look and the feel and the styles, like the pixel art. Like fire. The lands with the little turtles going through them, like fire. Pizza lands, disgusting. But yeah, the sign cards, the headliners, like crazy, right? So I don't know. And it feels real bad because the internet hates turtles. And yeah. If you say you like turtles, they're going to eviscerate you. And it feels bad, man. Like, why are we so negative? Like, can you imagine going to preview? You're like, oh, I heard there's a Turtles Magic the Gathering thing. Let's go, right? I know Black Lotus. I love Turtles. And you go there, bunch of, like, sweaty people, like, ah, Turtles. Like, give me my Kithkin, you know? Like, give me... Lorwyn was the last set they ever made that was real, okay? You know, I'm like, ah, like, do we need to do this? Like, just enjoy your cards. If you don't like them, just don't engage. Just stay home. Play Lorwyn and Kip's draft, right? Like, why you gotta talk about it, right? It's okay.
I will say that that did get a lot harder once they all became standard sets. I felt like it was a lot easier
no
to just skip
standard.
Like a Doctor Who set or like a secret layer drop compared to like that's the set everyone's supposed to talk about. So I think it's a lot harder to skip like a premiere set or whatever. But Krim, what do you think? Where are you at with Turtles now that you've seen the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, unlike Richard, I actually have no idea anything about Turtles, and I just went into it as somebody who wants to see how the cards play, and I think the cards look really good. I got like an early play session in or whatever, and then, yeah, like they all played nicely. There's a lot of fun cards here, and most importantly, even though I don't know Turtles, there's just something about comic book art that always looks so good on the bonus sheets, and also the bonus sheet gave me a Trouble in Pairs that doesn't have plagiarized art, so I'm very happy about that, and now
yeah,
I can just...
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm happy to finally have a Trouble in Pairs that isn't plagiarized. It's like, oh, this is sick. I don't have to doodle over this one. So, yeah, like, there's a lot of solid, just very efficient cards in here, and I can't wait to talk about them more than that. Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm a foot guy. That sounds weird. I should put that into context, but
oh, no.
You know what? I'm going to leave it at that. No. Okay. I mean, the foot ninjas are I didn't even understand what they were until I was like, wait, the foot? This has to be a reference to the hand from Daredevil. And then I find out that Ninja Turtles is heavily inspired by Daredevil. And so I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Is it supposed to be like a spoof on that or something? Like satire
yeah.
of yeah, I read
it's,
that.
It's
I mean,
satire.
I don't know either
it's a
of them,
spoof but... on superheroes, and it's heavily inspired by some of the best comics, right? And
interesting.
I did not know that until like, you know, the set came out, and then I was like, oh, well, what's Ninja Turtles all about? Because I don't really know anything. So I get to just go in here and just hang out with you, Seth. You might even, like, you know what I mean? I saw the like some of the toys, I saw maybe an episode or two of the cartoons growing up. But for me, I was a Street Sharks kid, so that was a totally Jossum show. And I absolutely would kill for that. But, you know, this has got some powerful cards. So can't wait to go over it.
Yeah, we're going to get in the cards in a minute. As far as me, so I think the way I view this set is, for me, the flavor of the set isn't doing much for me. I think there's a decent amount of cards I find pretty cringy. Like, I think the pizza cards
are
super cringe.
Don't say anchovies and banana.
Like,
say anchovies and banana.
All of them. Not any specific one. All the pizza cards, I think, are just, like, silly, and I don't especially like them. I think, so I would give this at, like, a D, maybe, as far as, like, the flavor. It's just not doing it for me. I think card design is actually fine. I'd say it's kind of average. But what sold me on this set, having some value in the scheme of things, and actually I think it's kind of like an average set overall, is I did the collector booster box opening over the weekend, And I was blown away at just like how well designed the collector boosters were in this set. And the thing that really did it for me, like I've been doing these collector box openings for a couple of years now. And every time we open like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 of collector boosters and we just get wrecked. We never get our value back out of them because that's what it's like opening collector boosters. But this time, I actually felt really good. For the first time ever, I actually kind of felt like, wow, I'm actually getting my value out of opening a collector booster, which never happens to me. And I think the big reason why is I think Wizards solved a huge problem with collector boosters with this special like source material sheet on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Normally this sheet's like 50 or 60 cards, and there's like a handful of like Chase Good cards, and then there's a whole bunch of like random commons that have source material art that aren't worth anything. So that like slot in the booster pack just was never very exciting. Like sure, you could win the lotto and hit the high-end Chase card, but a lot of times it's some bulk common with art from whatever the IP is. But this time, there's only 20 cards on the source material sheet. And almost all of them are just like banger reprints, like $30, $40, $50 Ashcots and Trouble in Pairs and Plague of Ermine and Teleportation Circle and All Will Be One and Underworld Breach and Doubling Season and Waves of Aggression. Like, it's just a list of really expensive cards, and you get one of these in every pack. And it just made this like super nice baseline of value in each pack where, like, even if your other cards sucked, you're getting like a $10, $15, $20, $30, sometimes $60 card out of your source material reprint slot. Plus, one of the big issues I had with Spider-Man was they just didn't have hardly any special foilings. I know there was like the super rare Baghead Spider-Man that was like impossible to open, like headliner level, serialized card level, that had special foiling, but you couldn't just get like a Surge foil or a Fractured foil. In this set, they had both Surge foils and Fractured foils, so you'd randomly get like a Pixel card in Surge foil or whatever, and it's like a $50 card. So I just thought like this set was actually super fun to open, and that's what really sold me on this. And even if you don't like turtles, I think just the way they design the special sheets in these collector boosters, I hope Wizards keeps doing this, because I think they actually kind of cracked how to make collector boosters that are worth opening with TMNT. So I hope they apply this to Secrets of Strixhaven and Reality Fracture and like all the upcoming sets that we have, because I think these were just really well done collector boosters. And to me, that made the set like much better. Like, I still don't think it's a great set, but I think it's like a pretty average set. And I think a lot of Magic sets are average, so I don't like especially hate it. I do think the pizza cards are pretty cringe, though. I really can't. I just can't get over that
part.
I am
so blown away by how upset the pizza has made and like has been
so
off-putting
bad
for so many people. But I'm like, we've had weird food before, right? We had ramen with gears and eyeballs, right? In Neon Dynasty, a lot of the things that happened here, you could also see in Neon Dynasty, and I don't know. I mean.
Look at the food chain, Krim. Look at the food chain, Krim.
But it's
that
so
might be the
funny
single worst,
like,
piece of magic art ever created.
It's meant to look horrendous, right? This is
no,
meant to
does
be like disgusting, right? Like the animalistic nature at which they consume pizza, and not just because they're anthropomorphic turtles. I'm talking like it's meant to be feral. And I'm like, okay, that's funny. Okay, I see you. But
Richard, are you going to play the Sword of Horthen Home that's a pizza cutter? Like,
dude,
seriously.
That was so
I actually like that one.
Is that not what we want, though? Right? Like, magic homages in, like you know, kind of like, but with turtles, right? Like, because I think that's, like, funny how, like, the Soul Stone was made to look like a Mox, right? Like a Mox Opal or something like that. And I like those nods, by the way. I think those are great.
So I actually think Sword of Horthen Home and Food Chain are great. The ones I don't like are like Commander's Plate. You're like, okay, dude, okay, you know, like Food Chain, you eat pizza, cool, right? Sword of Horthen Home, you're using the pizza cutter, like you're, it's his like GTA thing, right? And it looks like a pizza cutter, whatever, cool, right? Commander's Plate, you're like, you're using boxes of pizza for armor, like what? And then I really hate the like the actual food cards, like the ones that are actually food.
Guac
like
and marshmallow pizza and stuff like
pizzas
that.
Pizzas and
yeah
things like that. Like, to me, those are the hats of this hat set, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the same as slapping a hat on everything and calling it a day, calling it Outlaws of Thunder Junction. That's the same. But I'm willing to overlook that due to the other bangers, like Sword of Horthen Home. Like, I would play that one.
Oh, the internet's
going to
be mad.
But
that, Richard.
Okay, those ones are like borderline, right? Those are like the yellow border cards, right?
Yeah,
but like,
okay.
Underworld Breach, right? Crazy, right? Like, I play that, right? What else? Brainstorm. Brainstorm looks great. Arcbound Ravager. I like that. Doubling Season. I'll take that, right? The Pixel cards, which I won't be able to afford.
Those are so good.
But those are legendary, so you can't like really play them unless you're actually playing that deck. Like there are a lot of banger arts here, right? Like, and then the main set card. If you're opening play boosters, maybe you get scuffed, right? The main set cards are kind of meh. But the bonus sheet cards and the extra special treatments, like I kind of like. And I'm willing to overlike pizza or overlook the pizza aspect of it for this. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just glazing it too hard, but like I hate how people are so down on the set. What bothers me more is how much people glaze Lorwyn Eclipse. Just because it's like the last in-universe thing that they're trying to battle back against Universe Beyond. Like, my God, Lorwyn Eclipse Limited is like terrible. I hate it. I cannot play it, right? But people like glaze it so hard just because it's like Universes Within, right? It's okay to not like it, even though you like Universes Within, right? Like, it's okay, right? It's okay to like a Universes Beyond set, even if you dislike them in general. It's okay to let other people like Universes Beyond, right? Like, it's okay, right? Like, nothing, it's not 100% on everything, right?
So daring to just
it's so daring, right?
Wild,
it's like, you know, if you don't
have
anything nice to say, don't say it. Like, I don't know, right? But I don't know. We'll see how Turtles shakes up, right? But I hope it's available in stores, and I hope it's available for MSRP, right? And people will declare that like a failure, but like, I'm like, that's how it's supposed to be, right? Try playing Riftbound. Try playing One Piece. It's all freaking sold out. You can't get your hands on anything. And then the one time the manufacturer makes enough stock so that it actually sits in Target for more than like 5 microseconds, everyone's like, oh my God, wash set, so bad, right? Imagine being able to walk into your store and buying the set at MSRP. What a garbage product, right?
I want to pay more money.
You kind of want that, right? Like, that's what you really want, and you know, you're like, oh, remember the days of $80 boosters and like Spider-Man's like getting there. And they're like, right. So I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
It used to be like $85, right? To pre-order a box of like whatever the basic box was back then. That was so nice. Also, oh man, dude, like, I don't know. Everyone's so serious all the time now. And I'm just like, dude, Magic is a fun time and is a silly game sometimes. And it's okay to be silly. Like, but some people are like, it has to be serious 25-7.
You know, the funny part is, and so Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, right, was like a half turtle throwback set, right? Like, it's, you know how like there's Harry Potter, but then Wizards is like, nah, we can't do that. Strixhaven, right? Here's our take on this thing. If they did their take on Ninja Turtles, which was basically Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, like a lot of it was inspired from like Turtles. Everyone's like, yeah, great. Good job, guys. But then when you do the actual material, everyone's like, oh my God, what are you doing? Disgusting, right? So I kind of find it funny that there's that reaction, because there's a bunch of like turtle and rat cards that are clearly references to Ninja Turtles in Neon Dynasty. And everyone was like, yeah, that's kind of cool. But when we get actual Splinter card, everyone freaks out.
Right? I feel like a lot of corporate control,
like being able to control your IP, right, is much different than like having a partnership with, I don't know, whoever owns Turtles, right? Like, Neon Dynasty can be whatever we want it to be because it's our thing. I get that. But this would be like, the difference is like, it didn't feel like, you know, looking at these cards, it doesn't look like, oh, Turtles wanted it to be this way, that way. You know, like, it's not all muddied up from like the partnership. It just looks like this is a fun like set that was designed to be like this, whereas like Spider-Man got beefed up to like 180 cards like halfway through the design process, right? This looks like this was the intended design for how Turtles was going to be.
I guess maybe that explains the lack of like surge foils and fracture foils and some of those like extra things in the Spider-Man set too. Maybe that got lost with the like having to change things late and like they ended up getting left out. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the set does. I feel like the overall mood on the internet is not very good about the Turtles set at the moment.
Remove Turtles. That's the and then end the sentence there. The overall vibes of the internet is never good.
I guess no matter
what fandom you're in, by the way, all fandoms are just always burning.
I
feel Wizards itself
point.
Is down on Turtles though, because the set is juiced, right? Yes. Like you always see it, right? Whenever they release what they think is a questionable set, they juice it up. Let's add some shock lands. Let's add some fetch lands, right? Yep. Let's add some galaxy foils, right? So based on the quality of the bonus sheet, which is a departure from their normal bonus sheet. And the amount of special treatments, I think Wizards thinks this set will be mediocre. Maybe like, not mediocre, like average. They mean the same thing. But average is a nicer way of saying it. So they juiced it, right? So I do think Wizards is worried about this one, especially coming off the backs of Spider-Man, because a lot of the comparisons seem to hold. So they're juicing it. So we'll see how this ends up, because apparently this is not enough, right? People are still not happy about these like fracture foils, these bonus sheet cards. So I don't know what Wizards will do from here, and we'll see how the sales shake out. What if Turtles is like the third best selling set of all time? Is the internet going to explode? Like, what's going to happen?
I would be surprised. I'd be surprised if that happened. I think some people just really don't like Turtles or any universes beyond. I think like there is a contingent of the community that's where they're at. And it's just like, if it's universe, you could print, I don't know, a literal Black Lotus that was TMNT with a pizza on it. And it would not be, you wouldn't want that Black Lotus, even though it's a Black Lotus, just because it's a universes beyond card. So I think there's like some percentage of people that are just never going to like any universes beyond that. And I think that's fine. Like, I think it's okay for people to like things and to not like things. And especially on the internet, I think it's okay for people to meme on things like cringy looking pizza cards. So I wish people would just like appreciate, like, or I don't know, respect that people are going to have different opinions. And when it comes down to it, we're talking about Magic, right? Like, in the grand scheme of the world, pizza on a piece of cardboard is not going to determine whether someone lives or dies or the future of the human race or anything. So maybe we just cut each other a little slack and let people, you know.
Online, people talk like cartoonish villains, though. Like, I've noticed this. There were some of the vitriol you get back there, like, you could never perceive how great the Magic was as a game. And now it's like, I'm like, dude, I don't know why. Okay, calm down. All right, calm down. We're all just talking about Magic. I don't understand online, but you know what? Hey, people are definitely entitled to disliking just as they are to liking, right? So like you said, I don't know, we're all here to hang out and play Magic one way or the other, right? You're not lesser of a Magic player for liking something or more of a Magic player. So, although the funny thing is, somebody did call me a tourist, and I'm just like, that's funny. That's funny. I
what does a tourist mean? You just come and go.
Slop goblin, but he's not a tourist.
Yeah, I'm a slop goblin, but I've been a slop goblin, so that's the difference.
Anyway, we got to talk about some TMNT cards. So we went a little longer than I thought, just talking about the set and all this other stuff. So let's do it this way. We got a list of cards that we think actually might be good and constructed. Let's go around and you can just pick a card that you think actually matters from this set, as far as standard, modern, whatever 60 card format. And we'll talk about it a little bit. And let's start with you, Krim. Krim, what's a card from the set that you actually think could be interesting for constructed?
I think Armagon Future Shark.
Mm.
Have you? So I know.
Isn't it like a million mana?
It's come on. Is it like Bringer of the Last Gift a million
mana?
Oh,
we're reanimating it. Okay.
This is another powerful target for like a superior Spider-Man deck to reanimate. And just become, right? Because superior Spider-Man would get that ETB. You get to destroy up to three creatures that your opponents control. Dude, that's pretty big, right? Like, I don't know. I like that card a whole lot in that exact shell.
I could see, like, so especially if you're playing Formidable Speaker, which you are, you probably don't even have to play four of these, right? You can probably play one or two of these, maybe one of these in your superior Spider-Man deck and still be able to find it consistently. And I think there are going to be situations where this is your, like, if I reanimate anything else, I probably end up losing here. Or, like, you don't have a setup where you're able to, like, your opponent has too much in their graveyard for you to bring her or whatever. And this might actually be the best option. So I think in that context, I could get behind the Future Shark actually being standard playable. I can't imagine hard casting it. It's just 8 mana so much. But if you're cheating into play, I think it could be worth it.
I don't think anybody's out here hard casting Arden or Bringer. So I, at least I haven't
It's got
seen
flash.
That. The flash is cute. I'm like, thank you.
So
that makes everything playable.
We've learned we always overrate four drops, so we're just going right to the eight drops this time. Yes. So you can't mess up a four drop if you only talk about eight drops. Richard, what do you think of this one?
I think it's playable in standard and only. Yeah. It's not one of those reanimation targets where you're like, oh, yeah, we're going to see it way back to vintage or whatever, right? Like, no, right? This is a standard only reanimation target. Specifically, because we have Formidable Speaker, you can just put one in your deck and call it a day. Or you can put it in your sideboard and bring it in. If Formidable Speaker goes, this I can't imagine you playing like multiples of this for your deck, right? Like it seems silver bullety. And this is not like the primary target you want to reanimate. So if that goes, then this goes too.
I mean,
but I can see
this could go
like,
in kill three Excruciator. Things. Which is all about just sitting there and doing nothing until you excruciate, right?
It might actually be better in Excruciator than the Breeder decks, actually, now that you mention it. Yeah, that actually does make sense. Richard, why don't you pick a card for us? What's a Turtles card you think might work in Constructed?
All right. Tarmogoyf. Super Shredder. Two mana, 1/1, menace. When another permanent leaves the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on Super Shredder. Now, notably, it's anyone's permanent, right? Including your opponent's fetch lands, including your opponent's creatures. And unlike big old Tarmogoyf that gets chumped for days, this one at least has menace. I think this card's really good. I might actually play Rakdos in Modern. we'll try it. Why do you need green? What does green even do at this point?
Yeah.
The big problem, like 2026 cards, is it's legendary. Mm. Right? What you really want to do is like hold everything up, put two of them down, you know, fetch, remove, whatever, right? And then you smack with like 2 7/7s or whatever. But you can't do that. So I don't know how much the legendary clause will hold this thing back, but this has to be just straight up better than Tarmogoyf, right? Like,
it gets hexed.
And that is true. There is some removal, I guess, that actually takes advantage of. But I guess Tarmogoyf gets hexed too, right?
Yeah, all of them do.
Like, they all
this
do.
This is just going back to Richard's fatal push dilemma.
I think the card's really good. Legendary is, I think, a reasonably big downside, although I guess you can legendary yourself and just get a trigger if you draw two of them, which is not exciting to pay 2 mana for a trigger.
Well.
But this card might be strong enough. Like, some legends are so good, if they stick, you win the game, and if they don't stick, you win another one. And this might be on that tier where it's like, if you're built around this, maybe you don't mind drawing the extra copy, because if your first one sticks, you're probably just going to Voltron your opponent out of the game anyway. So like, oh, I can afford a dead draw because you're just going to die.
There's a lot of evoking going on right now, by the way. And by the way, you could also emptiness this back. So if you emptiness this back in standard, you also get an additional trigger there. So I don't know. There's a lot you could do with this. This thing's going to grow like super fast.
Go ahead.
I was going to say team ups are available. Super Shredder and Sephiroth, the duo you never knew you needed, right? Like we can play straight aristocrats somehow out of this, right?
We also have Moonshadow. I was going to say, I've been playing a lot of Rakdos Monument lately with Moonshadow, and Moonshadow's been really impressive. And Moonshadow triggers somewhat differently because you can trigger off discarding cards, and this is only the permanent. But I could definitely see a deck where you're like, turn one Moonshadow, turn two Super Shredder, then trying to like sack stuff to like grow both of them and like getting your opponent. So I think the card's going to end up being really good. I think it is one to look out for, even outside of standard, too. I think this one could have Modern potential, like Richard said.
Wait, Richard, does this mean that now you could play Rakdos? You could bring your Rakdos deck to standard now, the one that you've been waiting to play and haven't played a single game of?
Just the biggest L in my life, buying a $200 standard deck. It has seen literally zero play in, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. So should I keep upgrading it, Krim? Should I keep upgrading it?
Yes, but now it's good. And you here, Richard, for all the boomers of Magic, you get to play with Phoenix again. It's sick as hell. The one that has if you're ferocious, it comes back.
Yeah, Hollow One Phoenix.
It's in the deck, dude. It's a sweet deck. It's a
you
super
might actually
sweet
like,
deck.
You might like Rakdos Monument. That deck is sweet. All right, let's move on to the next card. And I think this card's actually really good. This is another one where I kind of hate the art on this card, like, a lot. It's a little too fourth wall breaky for me. But Lessons from Life, a 4-mana Simic sorcery, it says, draw 3 cards and you put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield tap. So if you've been playing Magic for a while, you might remember a decade ago, there was a card called Urban Evolution from, what, I think our second trip to Ravnica?
Yeah,
but anyway,
to Ravnica.
Like a decade ago. And this card was 5 mana to essentially do the same thing. Draw 3, put a card, land into play from your hand. And that card actually saw play back then in ramp decks. And this is just a very power crap version. Being one less mana is huge. There is a lot of competition in Standard, which is my one concern. Like, if you just want to draw cards, you got Stock Up, you got Consult the Star Charts, you got Quantum Riddler. So maybe this is a card that gets lost in the shuffle. But I think 4-mana draw 3 and ramp is actually a very, very good effect. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were Standard decks that could take advantage of this. The R, since you might be listening to this podcast, it is turtles playing magic cards with other turtles on a magic card, which, what do you think of the art on this one? Do you guys, is it, well, Richard, you have high tolerance for TMNT art. Do you think it's cute and, like, is it precious that it's showing its magic, or does it come across a little forced?
I'm going to lose our audience. I actually love it. There was, like, a series. I think they're, like, FNM promo. I don't know what they were. There's, like, the series, and it's, like, Sarah Angel, Lord of Atlantis, and, I don't know, like, Zombie Master or something.
I remember Lord of Atlantis. Yeah.
They're playing magic cards. I love it. I love it not because they're turtles. I love it because they're just playing a game of Magic the Gathering. So, yes, the fourth wall, blah, blah, blah. But I actually love it. So this card is actually really good. So I'm very excited to pick up my copy of Lessons from Life. I play Harmonize still, boys. This is straight up better whenever you're playing Civic.
I'm surprised,
right?
You still play Harmonize. Wow. But
you need unconditional card draw in green in Commander, and that is very rare. Now, I guess in Civic it's different, right? Civic, you have all kinds of other options, but it's basically Harmonize still. I really like this card. I like the art. I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know about playability, but I'll back you up, Richard. I'll back you up. We're going to doubly lose all of our audience.
Someone be the sane one.
I'm here for our audience. I'm here. I think it's cringe.
The fourth wall break is hilarious. Those exact promos you referenced are some of my favorites, like the Lord of Atlantis. Ooh, it even says in flavor text, ooh, a Tide Shaper. This will go into my, like, Sevillian deck. I did say exactly that. And so I was like, okay. The fourth wall break is cute. I could get down with it. I don't know what this little turtle is, though. I guess he's like a mutant or something. I thought he was a ghost. I thought that was Casper.
Apparently, it was part of the comic, someone said. Like, apparently, I don't know. It is part of the turtle's lore in some way. Do you think it can see Standard play, Krim? Like, is there in a world with Sock Up and stuff? Like, I mean, it draws and ramps. It's in Badgermole colors. You can cast it real quick. Landfall triggers.
Doesn't want this, right? Because this A, you can't be something that you could tutor up with whatever the Court of Calling is from Tarkir.
That is true.
Right? Being like, you want all your stuff to be attached to a creature. Outside of, and if it's not a creature, it's like Oko. That's the only thing I've seen them, like, really, like, you know, allow into the deck. That Oko and Spider Sense, which makes sense.
Could this be better than Stock Up if you're in Simic?
No.
Because you're
I think Stock Up is the reason this isn't seeing play.
You think,
right? Because
it's one less.
It's one faster. Plus, all of our ramp is happening. Like, we're in Llanowar, Elf, Badgermole, Cub territory. Like, why are you ramping on, like, 4 mana? Like, what are we even doing?
Cards.
And if you want to draw cards, you got Stock. Like, Stock Up is infinitely better, right? Like, yes, you get one more card here, but Stock Up, you get to choose, right? Like, isn't that just, like, infinitely better, and especially at a lower curve? So I don't think it sees... Like, I guess if you want land ramp specifically...
Landfall? There are a lot of landfall shenanigans in Standard.
Landfall is not going to add blue for this.
You could make a blue landfall deck, Krim, if you wanted to. I think this is a staple in Commander. I think you'd play this in, like, any Simic deck, basically. I don't know why you wouldn't play this in any Simic deck in Commander. Anyway, let's do one more round. Let's do one more round. Krim, give us another TMNT card for Constructed.
Okay. For Constructed, I don't know if it's actually going to be playable and Standard. I'm gonna try it, but I have been seeing talks from, like, Vintage and Legacy, and where Urza's Saga is playable, and where people were playing Lava Spur Boots, they're now replacing it with Skateboard. And now Skateboard is a one mana artifact. I don't know. I think people are gonna try it out because, like, is the Ward one better than the ability to tap down a permanent? Apparently, in older formats, yes. I could see why, because in some, let's just say in standard, you know, if I get cloud, a cloud goes and equips a skateboard and then just like, I don't know, board slides over your health total, then that's going to be hilarious for one. And two, maybe sometimes you just need to get that one attack in to get your whole Voltron engine going. Right? Like, because if I just need to get one hit in with Lost Gite equipped to Cloud, then I use this, I tap you down, and then I get in, right? And now the engine begins. So the tempo of this, I don't know. I don't know about, like Vintage and all that, because I don't play it, but this is just what I've been seeing or like when it comes to the talks. I do want a kind of like a Voltron deck to pop off in Standard. I'm curious how strong that would have to look for Hammer Time to come to Standard, but... I think this could be good, right?
I mean, you never want to underestimate the power versus Saga. So if you're a one-mana artifact that Urza Saga can tutor up, you're at least in the conversation in Urza Saga decks. At first glance, for me, I'm like, it's hard for me to see how I would want that over the ward from Lavaspur Boots. I think situationally, I could see how tapping something down would be better. But I would feel like in a vacuum, ward one would be better than like tapping a permanent. I don't know. What do you think, Richard? Is this actually potentially better than Lavaspur Boots in that slot?
I'm going to go with Grim. I think this adds more disruption than ward in certain cases. So what can it do? It can tap a blocker, letting you connect,
a
right?
Permanent.
Which is important, right? But it can also tap a land, right? So if your opponent is holding land up for interaction, right? You play it, and they have to fire off their interaction immediately, and then you can react to that, right? So I feel this effect isn't that common in Magic, right? Like, just like something coming down to tap something. Like, we don't usually play them because they don't come on a useful card, right? We don't spend a card to do such actions. Right. But I can see you just resting a blocker and then going in. Oh, my God. I'm using one piece words. Tapping a permanent and then going in. Right. So.
But if they have two blockers, then does the whole house of cards kind of collapse?
But that's okay,
a bit,
right? Like,
and you wish you had a Lavaspur Boots.
You're playing. But like, is the ward one really helping you if they're clogging the ground with blockers? Right. And there's a lot of, like, we do have sneak. Right. So this is like kind of relevant. Right. We do have things like double attacking fear of missing outs or whatever. Right. Where if you just get in, they're dead. Right. Yeah. So I can see it. Right. It's not guaranteed, but I can see a world where you would play this. I am just sad that we have to say things like I equip Cloud with the skateboard and. Get in there, like
we are living the equip a can of Mountain
Dew. I don't know about that one.
We are like so close to the right? attack with a can of Mountain Dew. Oh my
I think
god,
we are there.
Yeah, we're just about. It'll be interesting.
So
I mean, it's only one to cast, one to equip, and it works with Urza Saga. So I can see
also
why people
pumps.
Are interested in testing, and it does pump +1/+0 to you.
It's okay. How about this, Seth? It's into the Flood Maw.
But
no, like for reals.
But on Flood Maw,
reals,
spend,
right? Like, into the Flood Maw is one
it.
Mana, temporally deal with something, right? Now they have to invest that mana again, so you're trading up the mana, right? But this is one mana, deal with something, get in there, right? Like, you know,
I think y'all be
reasonable.
Tripping. Y'all be tripping, but I guess we'll find out. We'll find out in a week or two. Richard, what's your last pick?
All right. Casey Jones, Vigilante. Vigilante. 1RR, 4/3. Human Berserker. 1 Casey Jones enters, draw 3 cards. At the beginning of your next upkeep, discard 3 cards at random. How many lightning bolts do we have, Seth? This is the dream. This is
we
the
got
dream.
A bunch of lightning strikes.
You got you just play this, you draw 3 cards, and then you use them all and you're hellbent again. Right? Yeah. And then your opponent is dead. Or you start trying to chain them together. Or you do weird discard shenanigans with other cards in the set, like Cool But Rude. But I think draw 3 in mono red, gotta be good, right? We gotta make this work somehow, right? Does it have haste, though? Does it count if you draw 3, but you wasted 3 mana and, like, your body? Like, does it really count?
I think his card's actually very good in the decks, in the right decks. You got to be a deck that can support it, especially like the Lightning Bolt thing is probably the best example. I just see you playing this empty-handed, drawing three, and then if you're playing a bunch of instants, you can even cast them on your next upkeep before you have to discard with the trigger on the stack. So I imagine you play it like that. It is hard for me to imagine in some sort of like red deck that's going to be low on cards, running out of cards regularly, that this card is not good in that scenario. So I'm really high on it too, although... discard at random is a scary, scary line of text that has killed many cards in Magic's past, like Tybalt and so forth. So it does make me a little worried
is,
to be.
This is not the same as Tybalt, right? Come on. This is not the same as Tybalt.
No, it's not. I think it's way better than Tybalt. But I still, the random, like, if you have cards in hand, I think there's going to be games where you literally can't play this on three. If you have like five or six cards in hand, I don't know if you can just run this out because. Discarding your best cards at random the next turn is very risky.
I mean, we've seen people play Case of the Whatever Study, right? The red one, the enchantment from Murders. Yep. I think this is better, right? Because at least it gives you a body on top of that. And in those same situations where you could deploy that thing, you could deploy Casey Jones here. And it plays real nicely with all the Monument decks. Heck, you know, maybe that Rakdos deck that Richard needs to try out could play this because you're discarding. You're doing, you know, the things like Moonshadow and Phoenix. You're getting all that good stuff in there with Inti and or Monument, right? So there's a lot of things that this card synergizes with right now in Standard that I think makes it worth the while. And I know Tursa exists, but oddly enough, this getting you three more cards is just better, I think. Even though Tursa could hypothetically cast you something from the graveyard if you have seven or more permanents in there.
All right. This card sucks. I changed my mind.
What?
Because you can't play it on curve. Like, it's a 4-mana 4/3. It dies to, like, everything.
Well, it dies at your next upkeep.
You still need to do the trigger when it dies, by the way.
Yeah.
And you're going long in a deck that doesn't want to go long. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you draw cards, but cool. You didn't help, you know, you didn't help close the game. And if you're like, I need to play this when I'm empty-handed, you need to have an actual 3-drop to play, right? So you're kind of clogging up your deck. And it's one of those cases where it's like, well, you know, if there was a 3-mana draw 3 in red, would you play it? And the answer may be no, because you need to play the 3-mana 4/4 haster deals like 18,000 damage when it comes into play. Otherwise, you can't close the game, right? So I can see how this sucks, because a 3-mana 4/3 body is kind of sus, right? It trades with the 2-drop, right? It dies to like infinite removal. So you really need to like get them down very low, top deck this, and then play it, right? And it's so situational at that point. And then not only that, you got to top deck into something that finishes them. So like a burn spell to the face, right? So
wait, Richard. I think you need to once again think about this, because I think, think about how many synergies there are to discarding right now.
Yes. So you play a discard deck, then I think this is gas. But then again, it's delayed discard.
It's delayed. Right? Yeah, it's Monument delayed. Deck, I'm kind of like, do I want to wait a turn for my Monument triggers? Like, you know how bad it's going to feel if you need one discard to kill your opponent with Monument and you play this and you have to wait a turn and you die while you're waiting to get to discard? Like, there is some risk.
But then grow your Moonshadows, or you can put if you're discarding your Phoenix, who cares? You have Inti, that doesn't matter, because Inti still rewards you for discarding, right? So I don't know. I think Casey Jones is looking pretty juicy when it comes to those discard decks.
I don't go a lot, but I want to bring up Desperate Ravings, okay, for you boomers. Desperate Ravings is an interesting
I played
thing,
right? That card.
It's raw card advantage, right? But you have to draw, like you draw two, discard one. Right. And you're like, well, if you just pretend that, you know, anything you draw off the top is random anyway. Right. So the fact that you're discarding a random card from hand is OK. Right. You're getting net card advantage. But in reality, most pros did not play Desperate Ravings. Right. Because you're playing the whole game with the game plan in mind. Right. You're scheming out your turns with the cards in hand. So having them just randomly change on you, even if you're getting more cards, is bad because your game plan goes out the window. So historically, the draw discard random has been bad because people like to game plan around what they currently have and like sequence their turns. So I think that's another knock against it, because we do have precedent of like a card that was strictly better than Think Twice. Right, strictly better in the sense of like raw card draw, but it created a random element, and most pros did not play it because they did not appreciate that random element.
I feel like the synergy pieces now reward you better for discarding, even if at random and delayed, right? So yeah. I think the trade-off is there, personally.
We will see. I feel like we're going through live on cast what my brain has been going through ever since this card is spoiled, because I just keep going back and forth to like, oh, I think this card's like busted, one of the best cards in the set. Oh, no, wait, I think this card's unplayable. Why would I ever want to discard it random? So I don't know. It's probably one of those cards that we're gonna have to actually play with to like see how it feels. I think it's got a shot, though, in the right deck. So
either that or end of the year when we do our roundup.
Yes, we
got all
the way to hear this clip back, aren't we?
So we're running long, so we got to wrap things up. I just want to shout out super quick. I know we talked about this one a bit before, but the more I think about it, I think Cool But Rude, despite art that I'm not a big fan. Who fights with a pizza? Who fights with a pizza? Come on
Jackie
now.
Jackie Chan.
Yeah, okay. Jackie Chan and that Ninja Turtle, apparently. But I think this might be the best standard card in the set. I think this card, the more I think about it, the like level two, whenever you discard two damage to each opponent in the context of like Rakdos Monument, potentially Mono Red Monument, some of the new cards, even like Casey Jones or Raphael's Technique, there's a lot of support for this. And I think that people think it's worse in Monument, and I think it is worse in Monument in a deck like Is It Lessons? It's trying to do this long, grindy thing. But I think that level two is so explosive, where in something like the Rakdos Monument deck, where you can easily just discard your entire hand for free at any time, that this is going to be able to come down and just like deal 10 damage, 14 damage, and just close out the game out of nowhere. So I actually think this card's going to be absolutely bonkers in those self-discard decks. But, I don't know. What do you guys think? Is it worse than Monument, or do you think this card can actually see play?
I think this card can definitely see play, right? I mean, the question is, what are you cutting? Is this better than Artist Talent? And the one thing I do want to say about it is that, okay, is it better than Artist Talent? I think Artist Talent is going to be... Would you cut Artist Talent or a few copies for this? Or would you stack...
So I've been actually building around this card. I haven't built just Is It Lessons. And Is It Lessons, I don't think I cut Artist Monument. I think it's too important. But building like Rakdos Monument and Mono Red Monument, I've just got rid of Artist Talent altogether and use other stuff for discard. So I think you actually can just replace Artist Talent with this card in those decks.
I like that the level up costs don't like get... It's cheaper than Artist Talent,
only
right?
Two.
As opposed to the three. Although it Artist Talent pays you back later if you're Is It Lessons, but if you're not Is It Lessons, then this is great, right? In that exact slot, and it triggers on attack, so that feels nice. I don't know. I love this card. I think it goes in that Rakdos deck that you know would have Phoenix and all of that stuff that Richard
so
should
good.
Totally play and think would like.
y'all ignoring the last ability, which is actually I think the strongest ability.
Gamble.
Right? Like you're sitting here, you're like, okay, does it replace Artist Talent? Like, maybe not. It's close, right? But the last ability is a 2-mana gamble. That's insane. Especially in something like Is It Lesson, where you're going to Ancestral Recall, like, if you do this, right? Or, you know, you get whatever silver bullet you need. I think the last motive puts it over the top. And I think this is the one. Okay, it gets discarded, right? But what about all the times it doesn't get discarded?
Sure.
Right? Like, having a 2-mana gamble is insane. So I'm just going to say this is a straight-up upgrade over the Talent. And then we will see this in a bunch of decks. Like, the plan of, like, first two modes are good enough. And if the game goes long, you're dead. And game goes long is, like, 2-mana. Right, so like no, it's like nothing, right? Like if you just don't apply enough pressure to me, I will win the game for sure, right? So I think that is insane. So I think Seth is right. This is the strongest card in the set. Like 2-mana gamble's too much.
It's gonna be good. But anyway,
this card is cracked.
I think that's all we got time for today, but on Wednesday, it's Early Access, so if you want to see some of these cards in action, check out Early Access, and then we'll have videos up next week. But I think that's our podcast. Richard, no fish mail this week, but how do people send in fish mail for future podcasts?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail. Send your scathing Turtles reviews to us. We're ready. We know it's coming. Send it.
And that brings us to the end of episode 576 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Crimp, thanks for hanging out. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.